join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. And now, if you will, Paul, WS2N, the SpaceNet report.
Okay, we're AC2 WS2N, SpaceNet report. And, yeah, oh, it's early. I think we're going to wind up ending early then. You know what we'll do? If somebody has a technical question in the middle of this, you know, and they thought of it, we could, you know, we could always stop the SpaceNet report and just switch over to that for if you want.
Okay, you know, it's up to you. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's no great, the sky won't open and lightning won't kill us all if we end a little bit early. And, you know, the audience out there sounds like they're a little tired, so maybe we should give them a break.
Okay, very good. Okay, anyway, what's today? December 7th. 80-some-odd years, I think 84 years or something, since Pearl Harbor, right? So, I haven't heard anybody talk about that on, even on the news. I tend to, not to shut the news off all day long. You know, anytime I walk by, they're talking about other nonsense, but I didn't hear anything about that. Anyway, yeah, SpaceNet report, we have a couple of good topics. One of the things we talked about last week was the International Space Station flying overhead. And I gave somebody information about the app, the ISS detector, which works really good. And luckily, the next night, which is the night we were talking about, which was Monday night, clear night, and minus 4.4 magnitude. Now, the lower the number, so when you're into the negatives, the brighter an object is in the sky. So sure enough, I went out there at a little after 5 o'clock. And sure enough, the thing came right overhead, right on time. I've done that many times. Looked like one right over the house. But the cool thing about it was the moon was up, full moon. And the moon was up in the, eastern sky, pretty much. So if you watch the space station fly, it came up, it was about 10 degrees above the horizon when you first saw it, but then it was, 65 degrees, when it went over the house. So it looked like it was going almost right over the house. But as it started to go to the east, the moon was there, and it went right into the moon. It would have been a great picture, if I knew that was going to happen. To get a good camera, and it really different. And of course, seconds later, you see it passing the moon and heading down out of sight. But it was probably a 6.5 minute pass. Very good. And another sighting like that will take place next Sunday. 7 days from now. And it'll be a minus 3 point something magnitude, which is also very bright. I find anything lower than minus 2.5 as being very bright. So that was pretty cool. And we'll do it again next week. Of course, if the clouds are out there, then all bets are off. And if you have the radio, which I don't have, for making contact with the space station, that's always an opportunity too. You never know if one of those people have the rig on, and they also have the repeater system that people use and all of that. So we'll see. I asked a question to AI, you know, because I was trying to figure out all the names of the astronauts that were on board at the time, and I said, you know, how many people on board the ISS at the time? And Gemini came back with, oh, seven. I know for a fact there were 10, you know. There was four from, that was docked with the Dragon vehicle. Anytime they go up, they usually bring up four people. And then there were two Soyuz vehicles that were attached at the time. And each one of those carried three. So, you know, 2 days later, just for the heck of it, get back on Gemini. How many people on the International Space Station? This time they said 10. So go figure. You know, it's good, but it's not perfect like you were talking about earlier today. But interesting. Any comments? WS2X.
Nice to see the ISS overhead under the right conditions. Sometimes, you know, at this time of year, because of the lack of reflectance and sun low on the horizon, you really don't get to see very much of it. But in the late spring, summer, you could actually see a lot more.
Yeah. Depending on orbital mechanics, too, you won't see anything for, you know, a couple of months, and you'll see it early in the morning. So, I used to be an early riser, you know, when I used to go off to work, and once in a while, you know, you'd be able to go out there, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning and see the space station go overhead. Now, another space station that you could see using the same app is the Tiangong space station. That's gotten pretty big up there, and that comes along, and once in a while you'll see a -3 or so magnitude, you know, with the Chinese space station, and they have right now 3 people on board. A couple of weeks ago they had 6. And they realized they had a broken spaceship attached, got hit with some kind of flying debris. So the three of them came back. And, you know, that left, you know, the three on there that's on there now, they'll be on there for, I guess, another 4 months or so before they return. But before they return, you'll have another crew come up. That's the standard way of doing it. Three always comes up, and the three go down. The same with any transfer of crews with the International Space Station. You know, if you're going to have 4 scheduled to go down, you'll see 4 come up first. And then usually a week or 2 later, then the other one goes down. And that's the way it goes. Anyway, any comments? WS2X.
KF2CC, the station ID. Yeah, I like the ISS detector app, and actually the next one that's going to be really, really nice, I believe it's going to be on Sunday, December 14th at 6:37 and 46 seconds with an inclination of 50 degrees, and it ends at 6:44. Is that the one you were talking about?
Yes, it is. That's one week from now. And yeah, that'll be good. I think it's a -3 point something magnitude. So we'll look forward to that. And I would say anytime I go to look at these things, 50% of the time it's cloudy, and the other 50% it's not. So 50-50 chance of seeing the space station go overhead. It's really cool though, if you're with somebody and they've never seen that before. I did that with my neighbor once. I mentioned that here on the net. I'm out there on a cold evening, just standing there next to my truck, and along comes my neighbor with his dog. And, what are you doing out here, boy? It's kind of cold. I said, no, I'm waiting for the space station to go overhead. Really? I said, yeah, you know, it's going to go over, you know, over by Tom's house there. In about 2 minutes, and then I told him where it's going to wind up, and he gave me that, you know, you got to be kidding, look. Sure enough, you know, 2 minutes later, bam, popped out of, you know, right in that exact location, and John said, that is really cool. So it's always fun to do that, you know, get people over or something, you know. Tell them you're going to go out and look at the space station. Make sure it's a clear night, though. Back to you, Brian.
As the days get longer and you have start to get sunlight in the morning earlier, and also sunlight, more toward the evening, you have a better chance of seeing much more detail. And you have a better window, you know, this time of year. It depends. It's supposed to be minus 4.3 magnitude, so it may be able to go ahead and see it. But then again, you know, really it's kind of like quasi sunrise, so you may not be able to get any detail, you know what I mean?
No, they figure in the brightness of the time of day when they give it. They give the magnitude report. So, that's really not a problem, you know. And even like last week, that was very bright, and it wasn't 100% dark out yet, you know. And if I had binoculars, I think I would have been able to see some dimensions to the space station, which I've done before. You know, you've got these long solar panels sticking out. Sometimes they're helping reflect the light down. And, you know, each one is like, you know, 40 feet long. 40 feet wide, and overall, you know, you have many sets of them. You have like 250 feet, you know, length. So it's pretty big. So you can kind of make out, you know, something. But I know if you had, you know, a good telescope or binoculars, you got to probably could see some dimensions to it. Okay, I wanted to also mention this Chinese rocket that went up, ZenQ-3 rocket, last week. Yeah, it got off the launch pad, launched from northwestern China. But the idea was to also save the booster, trying to duplicate what we Americans are doing. So, sure enough, the rocket successfully got the payload to orbit. The booster started coming down, and they got a long ways to go yet because the stage ignited, you know, and it tried to slow itself down, and it crashed into the desert. But they are trying to do it, you know. They have very similar landing legs that look like a design from SpaceX. Looks like the Falcon. But
time goes on, more and more companies are trying to do this. Even Boeing launches the Vulcan rocket now. They've had three successful launches. It's a heavy lift vehicle. And they're starting to think about saving the engines themselves. The rest of the rocket they don't care about. They feel it's that's not that valuable. But if they could send save the four engines that are attached to the Vulcan rocket, there's two of them from the booster, that would be a big plus. And they have a plan on how they're going to do it. It's really different. You know, once it gets up into altitude, you know, roughly about 60 miles up, you know, it will do a boost back burn to some degree. But then the engines themselves, the two of them, the engine compartment, will separate from the booster. And then attached to this engine compartment is going to be this inflatable donut-shaped type of deal. It's going to open up like a cone. And the material on it is a special material that really won't burn up as it comes through the atmosphere. But it's going to be very large in diameter. Like, I think it's something like 23 feet in diameter. And it will protect the two engines as they come flying down and land into the ocean. Because this thing's inflatable, it won't sink. They'll be able to pick up their engines and bring it back. So everybody's trying to copy SpaceX. You know, they've done it hundreds of times. And now, of course, you have New Glenn doing it with that rocket, you know, by Blue Origin. Then you have one coming online next year. They plan on reusing their rocket. That's called the Neutron rocket by Electron. So the idea is to drive the course down, and starting to see it more and more. Good for the space, but I'd like to see another space station go up in multiple parts, if need be, and create a good-sized space station. We're only going to be able to see this thing for so long. You know, after about 5 years from now, they have plans on deorbiting the whole space station. The plan is now to send up an $800 million Dragon rocket, special Draco engines. I heard like they want to put like 30 of these things in the back of the trunk of the Dragon rocket. They plan on attaching it to the front of the space station. At the time, it would be the Harmony module. Attach to that, and then use that to slow it down, to have it burn up, and burn up over the South Pacific. That's what they burn everything up anyway. And, you know, when a cargo vehicle comes down, or a Cygnus cargo vehicle comes down, or another one like the HTV-X, that's a very large cargo vehicle built by Japan. Right now that's attached to the space station. When that comes down, they all burn up in the atmosphere over the South Pacific. So that should be interesting. Any comments?
I don't see any sense in decommissioning it. It should be kept up and maintained and enhanced. And I had a crazy theory about, you know, floating it slowly over to the moon and putting it around the moon. You know, crazy things, but, I mean, to go ahead and build it and then to throw it down to the ocean, that's kind of silly, you know, and it only pollutes the ocean and our atmosphere.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of space junk coming down every day. I think there's an average of 5 Starlink satellites coming down every couple of days. It's not good. But yeah, you can't leave the space station there much longer. It has a lifespan. They figured originally on 15 years when they conceived of the International Space Station, and they've exceeded that. Now we're up to 25 years. It'll be 30 by the time they deorbit it. The seals, you know, there's countless modules. There's at least 15 modules, and they expect sooner or later some of those steel starting to go. And they know one is in bad shape already on the Russian side, called the vestibule area between the loading dock and the Zvezda module. Zvezda module is a big module for the Russians. You know, their living quarters and everything. And that connection between the Zvezda module and where either Soyuz manned rocket would dock or Progress cargo vehicle would dock, that area leaks. So what they do is they keep that door closed. One time they used to just leave it open. And now they close that, hatch, because they know in between that there's a slight leak. And they never attach now a crew vehicle to it, only the cargo vehicle. It used to be either or.
Hey, Paul, and one YDY.
And one YDY, yeah, go ahead.
Just out of curiosity to reinforce Brian's don't throw it away mentality, how much fuel would it take to get the ISS up to a high enough orbit where it wouldn't be skirting the atmosphere and decaying, you know, because it decays slowly, or its orbit decays slowly over time, and that's why they have to boost it every now and then. Any idea of how much fuel it would take to get it up high enough where that wasn't an issue?
Well, they could have actually, well, they could have done it years ago. But the idea is to keep it really no higher than 250 miles above the atmosphere, above the Earth, because the atmosphere expands and contracts with the sun, and as it expands, you get, you know, rarefied gas molecules hitting this thing and slowing it down. You know, if that wasn't a factor, it would be good. Just like what you said, you'd be high enough, you'll never encounter that. The problem is when you start to get up higher, you start to get into the radiation world, and that's bad for people. It's also bad for electronics on a regular basis. So, you know, you have to find a happy medium, so they leave it there. Could never, of course, push this thing all the way to the moon. The amount of fuel it would take to do that would be who knows how many space line system rockets would have to be attached to that thing. You know, if you're looking at 1 million pounds to push from a 17,500 mile an hour speed up to a 25,000 mile an hour speed. So that's what you know. Probably a little over 7,000 miles an hour. To try to push anything to 7,000 miles an hour, the amount of force to move something, you know, to move like 1 pound of material to 7,000 miles an hour would be a tremendous amount of force. Can imagine doing that times a million. To get the space station up there with all those 15 modules and 11 segments for you know, all the truss segments that they have. That took around 35 flights by the shuttle, plus some couple of independent flights from Russia to get these modules up there. So you can imagine, you know, I guess to move it that speed, you'd have to move 7,000 miles an hour faster, you'd have to take, I guess, 35 gigantic rockets and attach it to this thing and start pushing it. And maybe you can get it to escape velocity, and then you can get it all the way to the moon. But, you know, it's really not feasible. You know, even when we send things to the moon, we send, you know, maybe 3 or 4 tons at a time, you know. If we're going to send cargo, you know, that's, you know, maybe 6,000 pounds or so, 8,000 pounds at most. You know, not 1 million pounds. Back to you.
BB2BX, with a comment?
I just wanted to know if I wanted to make a comment first. Stand by, Frank.
All right, Paul, thank you very much. Turn one white away.
Very good. I know we've talked about this before. It's a shame to waste this thing. I'm with Brian, but, you know, it's got a lifespan. And not only that, it's got a financial lifespan. They're pouring over $4 billion a year to actually maintain the space station. And when NASA's getting cut, I mean, yeah, they eventually got up to, what, $24 billion, but now that they're losing, I think, another $7 billion less for next year. You know, the money's becoming tight. Not that that was a factor. I mean, the main factor was 15 years and out. Frank, over to you, WS2N.
Yeah, Paul, a couple of comments. First of all, as I think somebody alluded to, and I had tuned out a bit, so I may have missed something. Some of the smaller space probes have actually gotten to the moon and ultimately attempted, and I think one or two did successful moon landings without getting that Delta V, apparently by going to very high Earth orbit and getting to the moon on much slower trajectories. As I understand it, that's not feasible for manned spacecraft because the radiation load is too high. But if the space station is, you know, that might work if the space station is evacuated in the sense that there are no personnel aboard and the orbit was gradually raised. That might be feasible, while it would probably take something on the order of Starship booster to get the Delta V. It would need to put that thing in, actually hit escape velocity and send it very quickly to the moon. That's not practical. With regard to the cost, it depends on how you figure the cost, because some diplomats, you probably heard this, say the space station is actually the world's least expensive peacekeeping program because it's involved the United States and Russia in a joint project. And arguably, it may be one of the things that kept us from actually going to war over Ukraine is both sides want the prestige of keeping the space program going, the space station going for at least a while. And presumably one of the reasons it's going to be deorbited is that the Russians no longer want to do it after 2030. Of course, the politics and diplomacy may completely change by then. I think another factor is that our space program, correct me if I'm wrong, is largely vendor-driven, and the vendors just want a chance to build a whole new space station, and charge the government and maybe some private companies to do that. Just like they wanted to get rid of shuttle, in part to build new technology, even though there was an argument for saying they've lost two shuttles and it just wasn't the best technology. So I think there are a lot of things going on. And, you know, of course, in terms of the NASA budget cuts, and you may have alluded to this already because I was away from the phone for a couple of minutes. Jared Isaacson is finally going to be allowed to become NASA administrator, apparently, and some of the cuts are being reversed. I've heard a couple of different versions of why. I don't know if we really know why. Anyway, so everything around that is changing with Isaacson be taken over, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on the reasons for that. Go ahead. WB2BX.
Yeah, the politics end of it is really, you know, that upended everything. You know, first the Gateway station, that's the future one planned to go around the moon. That was on. Everything is, you know, ready to go. In fact, they have hardware built. The first module is ready, almost ready, in Italy. And then they said, oh, we're going to cut it, you know. And then, 2 months later, oh, no, we're going to do it again, you know. The latest I heard is that we're still going to do the Gateway space station. So that's the one where you're going to have maybe eventually, say, around 5 modules, no more than that, attached to the to one another, going around the moon, but not in a regular orbit, not in a circular orbit, highly elliptical. You know, I mean, they'll come maybe as close to 1,000 miles to the moon. That would be, you know, perigee, but apogee will be 44,000 miles away. You know, like, you know, the equivalent of you know, maybe you know, 5 Earths. You know, the diameter of 5 Earths. That you know, far away, and then they'll come back. So it'll take 11 days to orbit the moon, and that would be the space station Gateway. You can imagine trying to do that with the International Space Station. Space Station, the best we ever did was with the space shuttle when it was attached. They would use extra fuel that they knew they were not going to use from the Ohms engines. They would buy them and push the space station much faster, which would raise its altitude. Best they could get out of that was 14 miles higher. You know, not hundreds or thousands of miles higher. You know, so how many space shuttles would you need to do that to try to accelerate this thing to a high enough altitude to eventually? You still have to go escape velocity, so you still have to get to that 25,000 miles an hour. But yeah, once you get to that speed, what was it? Intuitive Machines did it, and the Japanese did it with one of their moon landers. You know, you would send it out past the moon, like you said, Frank, and just keep on going all the way to the equivalent of 4 times the distance between us and the moon. Send it out to 1,000,000 miles. Moon is roughly 225,000 miles, so, you know, 4 times that distance. That would be the L2 location. correction, L1 location, between us and the sun. You just push it where it just has enough fuel, you know, as it's heading toward the sun, you know, you started off at 25,000 miles an hour. It's not going at speed anymore. You know, a day later it's going, you know, 20,000 miles an hour. And a day later it's going down 15,000 miles. And eventually, you know, by the time it gets three times past the moon, you're slowing down to, you know, 1,000 miles an hour until you get down to zero. So now here's the space station. They've actually done it with a couple of moon landers, like I said, Japan, and we did it once. It just starts to almost like hover in that one location, and then it starts to come back because the moon is, you know, and the Earth is starting to pull it back in the direction of us again. Until it gets near the moon I think when you get close to the moon, you're going around 5,000 miles an hour. So you're able to ignite the engines, slow yourself down, and eventually get into lunar orbit. And that would be, you know, not an eccentric orbit, like I said before, an actual lunar orbit, you know, where you would be maybe 100 miles above the surface of the moon, and then eventually slow down to even more. They eventually get down to 60. Standard orbital height is around 60 miles for, let's say, the Apollo mission from when we went up there. And then it would slow down eventually to get around 10 miles circular orbit, and then they're able to go into the landing phase, you know. But to move that space station is not an easy task. We have Progress attached to it now, and every time before Progress leaves, you know, after they fill it up with junk and they're going to burn it up, Progress, you know, gives it all the gas it's got, you know, and the most it could do is raise the whole space station about 1 mile. That's it, you know. So I'd like to find out the original question of how much fuel would it really take to get this thing to go 25,000 miles an hour. Well, or it's going 17,500 now, but to get it up that extra 7,000 miles per hour, you know. It would be, you know, and it's really not practical. Anyway, any other comments, Frank?
Well, you could go ahead and accelerate it around the Earth to 25,000 and use a slingshot effect to go ahead and get it out toward the moon.
You're kind of locked in it. At 17,500, you can't get it any faster. If you, you know, you start to deorbit it, I mean, to deorbit, to get, you know, in the direction of Earth, you actually have to slow the whole system down. So, to use Earth as a gravitational assist, you'd already have to be, you know, out. In a solar orbit, you know. They just did that with the Osiris Rex mission. That thing's been in orbit around the sun, and just recently, what, a couple of weeks ago, it came past the Earth, and they were able to accelerate it by 15,000 miles an hour to continue its flight around the sun. But it's already out there. It's already doing that. You can't use gravity to accelerate when you're already in orbit. You use it to slow yourself down. you can't accelerate unless you're, a comet coming from some other location, and you're coming near the Earth. You might pick up speed if you get close enough to the Earth. Anyway, that's my thoughts on that, Brian.
Oh, it makes complete sense what you're saying, Paul. I just want to just see it, do something rather than just, crash into the oceans and that's that. It's really so waste, it really is, and polluting, but whatever.
Yeah, I know. I go along with you with the pollution thing. I think I've said it before. They said if Von Braun came back from the dead and took a look at what was going on here, well, he'd be happy to see some things changing with the reuse of these vehicles. But if he saw it, let's say, 5 years ago and found out that we were still... the whole Earth still sending rockets into the drink when sometimes actually crashing it on the surface of the planet like China was doing for years, their booster would come down and it automatically, it was planned, it would crash into the land. Russia did that quite a bit with their proton rocket. Now things are starting to change little by little, which is a good thing. Hopefully someday, it'll be 100%. SpaceX is shooting for that with their Starship. The booster they plan on catching back in Florida, and then the Starship, the top part of it, eventually they plan on bringing that back and catching it as well. New Glenn with Blue Origin has plans on eventually doing the same with their upstage. But right now they've successfully landed their monster booster onto a barge. That thing's like four times the volume of what SpaceX does with their Falcon 9 at the New Glenn is just big, and they right in the middle of that barge. I was really impressed with that. And then hopefully Rocket Lab with Neutron Rocket will be able to complete the same act. Another company called Relativity, they'll be launching out of California for now. Later on this year, or next year, 26, they have a heavy lift vehicle, and they also have plans of reuse. So we'll see. China's trying it, but like I mentioned earlier, their booster did not make it. But you know what I want to mention before it gets any later? On Roy's website, you go to roy.ac2gs.com. He was telling you about it before about the three element Yagi that was drawn up by AI, which nothing like it. Also on that same website, if you look down further, he put a patch on there from the European Space Agency that I sent it over to him. What's going on is the European Space Agency also has plans of eventually sending cargo vehicles in the beginning to land on the moon. So they have a problem, a mission that they call Argonaut. In the beginning, it will be one mission, and every couple of years they'll send another one of these spacecraft to the moon. They plan on launching it on their heavy lift rocket. They launched the Ariane 6 rocket from French Guiana down in South America. And they plan on using that. They've used the, they've been successful quite a few flights already with the Ariane 6. Ariane 5 was very successful. Over 80 flights with that thing. But now, this is an upgraded version of that Ariane 5, now called Ariane 6. The Argonaut program will be launched by the Ariane 6 and eventually land on the moon. They plan on landing it on the South Pole, but, you know, they're designing it to land anywhere where it would be needed to help out, let's say, with the Artemis program. You know, if you eventually you've got people on the moon, and you might be leaving them there, or you need to send supplies, food, who knows what, to the moon, they will be able to help out. There's a couple other people that are involved in this kind of project, too. But they have a patch that they designed for the Argonaut mission. And I put it onto Roy's website. And what it is, it kind of looks like a boat. You know, the idea is, back in the olden days, they had the Argonaut and all this Greek mythology stuff. So they made up this patch, and it looks like this boat. And then if you look at the waves, on the patch, it looks like a bunch of lines, dotted lines. But if you look at it, it's really CW. It's Morse code. It's the first letter you can see is L, and then right below it, UNA. So it spells out lunar. So I thought it was pretty cool that they're going to use Morse code on their patch years from now when they send Argonaut to the moon. Any comments?
What about the state of Artemis? What's going on with that?
Yeah, stay tuned for February 5th, Brian. I'll be in front of a TV or a computer screen at that time. I want to see this crew take off. That's the planned time. With NASA, all bets are off, Bad weather, or we have a problem with the, some kind of a ground fault problem, or there's a boat floating out at sea, next thing abort, They get down to 3 seconds, abort, So you never know. But the plan is to launch SLS on February 5th with a crew of four, three guys and one woman. One of the guys is from Canada, Hanson. And they will take a couple of orbits around the Earth, make sure everything's okay, fine. If not, they have the capability of bringing Orion back. If everything's fine, they plan on using a TLI, they call it translunar injection. And I remember that term very well. Back in the old days, every time NASA set the vehicle off to the moon, TLI, translunar injection, that means that they're not coming back to the Earth anytime soon. So off they go. Again, that escape velocity when orbiting the moon, when orbiting the Earth, they're 17,000 plus miles an hour. Escape velocity, they've got to get up to that 25,000 miles per hour, like I said before. And they're going to have one big engine on the upper stage that's going to do that. And in the future, they'll have they're going to have four of those same engines. They're called L-10 Centaur rockets. They're actually liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen fed rockets. Each one each engine produces around 25,000 pounds of thrust. So in the beginning, the first one anyway, we'll have just one engine, and then after that, future missions to the moon, like the landing mission, we'll have four of these engines on board, on that upper stage. So we'll see. Plan on really just going around the moon once, not really in orbit. They're going to go out past the moon, many, you know, quite a few thousand miles past the moon, and then they're going to come back. It's almost like a free return, I guess, in case something goes wrong. So they're not going to go into an actual orbit like Apollo 8 did. Well, Apollo 8 did it. They flew out to the moon. They had the S-4B engine that they would fire, again, one big engine. That would slow them down to go into a circular orbit around the moon. And that they actually did that. They did 10 orbits on Apollo 8. You know, Apollo 8, they had a crew of three. And then eventually they reignited that same S-4B engine when they were on the other side of the moon. That gave them enough speed to get out of a lunar orbit and head back to Earth. But Artemis is not going to do that on the first mission. They're just going to go kind of past the moon, and then they're going to come back. So that's the story on that. So I'll have to look to see what day of the week February 5th is. Anyway, back to you, Brian.
Good question to ask is what happens after that? Let's say that mission goes successful. What happens after that? Do they finally establish a base with a, a gateway orbiting? Or, you know, it's going to take another 20 years then?
Yeah, I could just tell you the plan right now. I'm not counting on it. The plan right now is to have Artemis 3 be the first one that's going to land there. Duplicate what Artemis 2 is going to be doing with this crew that we just talked about. That will be the one that's supposed to land on the moon. But to land on the moon, you need a landing vehicle. They're waiting on SpaceX to, you know, take their time, but hurry up and produce a landing Starship vehicle. I mean, that's the present plan. You know, I'm glad they have a plan B. Plan B is for Blue Origin to use their Mark 1, they call it a Blue Moon Lander. And same kind of plan. They would send that out to lunar orbit and dock with the Orion when it gets there, send it down to the moon, then come back up. So, you know, that's their plan. SpaceX has a similar plan. Send their Starship out to the moon, dock with the Orion when it's out there, send Starship down to the moon, come back up. You know, and then everybody comes home on the Orion spacecraft and lands in the Pacific Ocean. So, you know, we'll see. From what I see, they're way behind schedule from that ever happening. Beyond that, they plan on having the first couple of modules for Gateway in orbit around the moon. At that point, then, the plan is now, again, it might change. It probably will change. But the plan is then on the next Artemis mission, which would be 4, 5, and 6, they would all dock with the Gateway space station going around the moon. And again, you're going to have this landing vehicle. You're going to get into the landing vehicle, either the Starship or Blue Moon, and head back down to the moon. As the years go on, and you do this over and over again, and you get better at it longer time on the moon, yeah, eventually you could have a base there. I mean, and then you could have, you know, landing vehicles with crew, you know, not only with crew, but with cargo landing in, you know, on the South Pole. And we're talking about many, many years from now, though. But back to you, Brian.
Well, you know, it was really exciting to witness the Apollo missions in my childhood, but this seems no more than a repeat of that. Just a little bit more space, another astronaut, and basically the same thing. Because the lunar module was the landing vehicle, and then it went up to the command module, or dock, so that was like a little mini space station, if you could consider that. And then it was on its way back to Earth. So I would like to see much more progress in a shorter amount of time. I don't know if this was really thought through, you know, but that's just my opinion. And the other thing is to focus on supersonic transport that is not noise deafening, and get that into motion as well. But, you know, just some thoughts, whatever.
I agree, yeah. A lot of people call this Artemis program Apollo on steroids. So, you know, it's what happens when you don't have, you know, 20-year plans. You know, these are all, you know, 4-year plans, depending on what administration is in the office. And they change their minds. It's unbelievable. The Bush administration had a completely different plan. Well, that was going to be kind of similar to Apollo, but that went out the window as well. Too costly, too risky, and you know, on and on and on. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. That's what I'm saying. You know, years from now, when all this is supposed to happen, you know, maybe they'll be ahead of schedule. My guess is they're going to be behind schedule. You know, 5 years is going to turn into 7 years, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, only time will tell. You know what I wanted to tell you, Brian? Homework. You asked about Bennu and the asteroid. I did look that all up. And they did find sugars, some kind of sugar-type material on an asteroid.
That time, complete.
And basis the basic materials, amino acids as well, with the building blocks of DNA and RNA, and, you know, I did look that up, and it's kind of long, so, you know, I didn't read that much into it, but it was investigated by multiple people, organizations, or have that capability to look into what's on the asteroid. And they did find this stuff, and it was actually so important that Mark Kelly, he's the senator from Arizona, he actually made a statement talking about this, talking about the sugars and, you know, what a big discovery it is and all. And I saw that on Blue Sky. I don't know if anybody's on Blue Sky. I'm on that. And, you know, he's one of the people that followed that. And you click on that, and he went on and on for about a minute or so, talking about the success of OSIRIS-REx with material that they found. And he did mention the sugars and all. So, anyway, I did look into it, Brian. Back to you.
More than welcome. All right. Well, you know, I just hope things in the space program move. I think we need to go ahead and have a national goal to do something. I think we need to have that, you know, mentality to go ahead and just do it, you know, and it takes...